National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Which Catholic colleges celebrate their authentic Catholic identity? The National Catholic Register has the answers. This week on Register Radio, we take an in-depth look at the Register's annual Catholic Identity College Guide with Register writer Joe Pronishin. And then we talk with Register blogger Monsignor Charles Pope and explore how to get past comfortable Catholicism and retool our faith for the challenges around us. Welcome again to Register Radio. I'm Register Editor-in-Chief Jeanette DeMello. I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, a senior editor for the National Catholic Register and a senior contributor for EWTN. Thanks so much for joining us. As kids of all ages are heading back to school, Catholic parents and students look for opportunities to strengthen faith through their choice of schools. The Register has long sought to help that quest through the annual Catholic Identity College Guide. Joining us today to discuss that guide is Joe Pronishin. Joe has been a longtime staff writer for the Register. He's written for us since 2005. He focuses mostly on feature writing, and for many years he put together the college guide. Joe, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, you're welcome, Jen. Happy to be here.
You know, Joe, this year you didn't actually put together the college guide. Sarah Gray Donis put it together with Amy Smith, who is our associate editor. But I thought it appropriate to talk to you about the history of the guide. Joe, how long has the Register been doing this guide, and what's the purpose of it?
The Register has been doing this guide since 2007, I was with it all those years until this year. But the purpose is to get our readers and anybody else who wants to check our website or our particular college issue connected to the best of the Catholic colleges out there, the ones that they can feel their children are safest at and learning the faith the way they expect them to learn the faith, you know, in an Orthodox manner.
Right. It's an important job to put this together and to give people the opportunity, I think, to feel safe in the quest to give their children the best opportunity to learn about their faith. Mm-hmm. And we go about this guide in a way that's somewhat tedious. That's why we got some extra help putting it together this year. Mm-hmm. And we have to contact all of these schools, and we ask a series of 10 questions. Joe, what are some of those questions?
Some of the questions, first of all, have to deal with the institution, and others have to deal with campus culture and campus life there. For example, you know, is the majority of board of trustees and faculty Catholic? Does the president and the theology teachers especially make a public profession of faith or have the mandatum from the church, from the bishop of the diocese? Do they take the oath of fidelity? For mm-hmm. campus culture, you know, is there a daily mass? Are there posted times for that? Speakers and advocates of for abortion, euthanasia, cloning, redefinition of marriage? Are they invited as commencement speakers or to speak at any time on campus? Or have they received honorary degrees? Or do you plan on that? Are there any clubs on campus that are not in line with Catholic teaching? You know, do you prohibit co-ed dorms? An important one today. And same thing with student health services. Do you prohibit, you know, referrals to abortion clinics or contraceptive advice, that type of thing? So we try to be very stringent on those.
Right, and really a very basic way of breaking it down is, you know, we ask them about their institution, how they keep it Catholic, and then we ask them about the campus culture, which really helps the students, to enter into campus life, a Catholic, very Catholic campus life, including the sacraments and opportunities outside of the classroom to grow in their faith.
Yeah.
And really on the institutional part of it, you know, some of the things we ask them are things that our bishops and really our Holy Fathers over the years have asked of Catholic colleges. And I wanted to bring Matthew into this part of the discussion as a historian, because you can talk, Matthew, to the point of where does this come from, this idea of a mandatum, for example, a very Latin word there.
yes,
but, you
exactly.
know, what is What does that mean, and why are we asking the schools if they're taking this mandatum?
Yeah, well, it's a sort of a statement of our time that we have to worry about the Catholic identity of Catholic schools, especially Catholic universities, but mm-hmm. here we are. The point of this is that really in 1990, Pope John Paul II, who was deeply concerned about the Catholicity of Catholic universities, that Catholic identity, issued an apostolic constitution, one of those papal documents, called Ex Corde Ecclesiae, which means literally out of the heart of the church. And basically it asked Catholic universities to do everything they can to promote a Catholic identity. And part of that is called the mandatum. And what that is it's a promise on the part of those who teach Catholic theology, those who are theologians, that they are faithful to the church, that they are in communion with the church. And the mandatum is taken. It's a formal kind of oath. And as the text says, I hereby declare my role and responsibility as a teacher of a theological discipline within the full communion of the church. And it's a recognition then, as a teacher of theology, that you actually do adhere to mm-hmm. the church's magisterium, but you also promise not to teach things that are contrary to the magisterium. And then you can add to that the oath that they are supposed to take. It's a profession of faith. So it's really a pledge that you're going to be faithful to the magisterium, but then you're also reiterating that you believe what you're asked to believe as a Catholic.
Yeah, and that's a really important factor of this is, you know, that level of belief and just the it assures the quality of the theology and in other areas too of what they're learning in the classroom. So it's I think this is just a huge part of what we do for the Register. So this is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I am speaking with Joe Pronishin, and I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host. We're talking about the college guide that the Register puts out annually and why it's so important to our listeners and also to the colleges that are in it. Joe, I wanted to turn back to you and talk about the number of schools. We've got 35 schools in the guide this year. Mm-hmm. Yes. How does that compare to past years?
That's actually been up a little bit in the last couple of years. And we had our high number hit in 2011 when we had 31. We grew from about 25, 26 to begin with in 2007. To 31 in 2011, and so every year we seem to add one or two, and it's held pretty steady in the last couple of years. We've, of course, asked many other colleges beside that, but they just seem to have a reluctance to fill out the questionnaire.
Now, Joe, are any of them this year, the new ones this year, are they, you know, can you talk about who some of those new ones might be?
One of the new ones is actually a renaming because it's a whole different added focus. Divine Mercy University is one of the new ones, so to speak. It used to be the International. It used to be the IPS Institute for Psychology, and they have added a counseling major there, two masters in that, for people who aren't going to do clinical counseling. Such as the doctorate in psychology and all, but people like priests and nuns who have to do a lot of counseling, lay people who have to do a lot of counseling, teachers, even 9/11 operators, they have signing up for this now. So, and they wanted to do it all with a sense of our mission of mercy in the church. So that's why the name Divine Mercy University has come about.
And, of course, this guide also includes a feature that you wrote about Divine Mercy. Actually, it was an interview, I believe, with someone there representing the school and talking about why they changed the name and what they're offering now.
Yes.
The college guide also includes another feature, which I just loved. It's about vocations at Catholic colleges that come from Catholic colleges, and it's really a beautiful feature. It's on the front page of the college guide, and it talks about all of those vocations that come from a few schools. I mean, we weren't able to touch base with all of the schools about it, but, man, there are so many religious vocations coming out of these Catholic schools. We feature Thomas Aquinas College out in California and their vocations. It says here, let's see, they have 65 ordained alumni and 45 religious sisters and brothers who are alum. And that's a beautiful number in just the last, 40-something years. So Franciscan University was also a part of this story, and they have 700 plus alumni who've become priests and religious over the years. Now they, you know, they're a much older school, so that kind of explains some of it. And all Christendom's also featured. I mean, it's just, it's awesome to see what the campus can produce in terms of gifts to the church and in religious sisters and brothers, as well as the lay people who are coming out very educated. What are some of the things, Joe, that the colleges say about their campus life?
Most of the campus life over there in the colleges, of course, one of the things they say is the obviously beauty of the church and trying to get the students to hear excellent priests, excellent lay people come in and speak to them various times, various speeches. They have wonderful programs going on for liturgy and various adoration times. Households like Franciscan revolve around prayer, and these students willingly and join them and want to join them, and they hold each other accountable for things like that, and for following their duty as a student, so to speak, and their studies, and hold each other accountable. So wonderful things like that go on at these colleges. The Donnelly College, for some reason, comes to mind. That here's a college that helps more or less the inner city students. So many of them. Monsignor Swetland the new president since that. You have colleges like John Paul the Great Catholic University out in California that is. Insists on obviously following all the teachings of their church, yet has a very heavy media department there, and so students are learning to become filmmakers and learning to become people involved with television, but with a totally Christian, a totally Catholic perspective.
Right, you know, and also, Joe, we've got international schools and institutes in here, so it's really quite comprehensive.
Yes.
We're really reaching the end of our time now, but I want to make sure that our listeners know where they can go to find the college guide. It is in our September 4th edition of the Register. It's also online, and we keep it online all year round, so people can go and visit it there. You could also, I think, even look at past guides online as well. So it's a real treasure, and I'm thankful, Joe, for your part in the past and in putting it together. I know this year you watched from afar, had a couple other projects on your plate, but thanks for chatting with us about it today.
Oh, you're welcome. And if I could just add quickly, I've found a great sense of joy in all these colleges and our guide over the years, not just once, twice, but continuously.
That's great, Joe. Coming up next, we will talk with Monsignor Charles Pope about the end of what he calls comfort Catholicism. It should be quite a conversation. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner. Or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Ooh. let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen. And we are joined now by Monsignor Charles Pope, a regular contributor to the Register's blogs and also a weekly contributor to Morning Glory on EWTN Radio. Monsignor Pope is currently a dean and pastor in the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., where he also serves on the Priest Council, the College of Consultors, and the Priest Personnel Board. He has published daily blogs at the Archdiocese of Washington website for quite a while now, and he's written for numerous other journals. Monsignor Pope has been writing for about the last year at the Register, blogging almost weekly. Monsignor, thank you so much for being on Register Radio. Welcome.
Well, it's good to be here. Thanks.
You know, your recent blog really has been a hit. It is called Comfort Catholicism Has to Go. It's time to prepare for persecution. My first question really is, what is comfort Catholicism?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's a bit of a coined term, but I think that we have a tendency, I think, to really emphasize not upsetting anybody in the church today, including ourselves. Generally, there is a kind of an unwritten kind of premise that when you go to Mass, you know, it's supposed to be something that's nice and something you like, and people are pleased, and the pastor hopes everyone leaves happy. And, you know, all of these are things which are not evil or wrong, but they're a little out of balance, because if you know, any reading of Scripture indicates that there's a pretty heavy dose in there of a call to conversion, and
Likewise
of preparing God's people for persecution. I mean, the Lord basically said, in this world you will have tribulation. And likewise, he said, you know, that the world will hate you. And we don't have much of that today. We sort of want to stay undercover and not offend. And, you know, I'm just not sure that we're preparing people for a culture that's becoming increasingly poisonous to our faith, unless we compromise.
Is there anything particular that prompted you to write this reflection now?
Not really. I think it's been a growing concern of mine. I did have recently some retreat work I did that, you know, may have, you know, maybe brought it into focus for me. But I have found that as I've been writing, actually, you know, doing blog work for almost 10 years now, and people consistently are saying to me that many of the things I write about, they never ever hear about in their pulpits or in their churches or their parishes. You know, the more, what we might call it, the controversial or edgy issues today. The most shocking moment, I think, for me was that how many people told me that in the immediate aftermath of the Supreme Court's decision on so-called gay marriage, that their clergy said nothing, not a word.
Yeah, no, it's really challenging, and I think that's why your blog did so well. I mean, it's been leading our chart that we keep each week on our top, you know, our top posts, and I think people need to hear it. So I completely understand why you get that kind of feedback. People need to hear these kind of things, and they really long for it.
Yeah, I think people are hungry. They're hungry for the truth, but they're also, I think, well, I mean, we're all human beings, and we need encouragement, and we want to speak up, but sometimes we don't even know how. No one's ever even modeled it for us. And so, again, this is one of the things, just I've been in a type of a parochial setting in the largely African-American parish and in most of my priesthood, and there's a kind of a, I think, a greater appreciation there for, so as some of the folks say, make it plain, Father, make it plain. just come and say what you mean, and mean what you say. Don't say it mean, but be clear. And too often, people more often tell me they're subject to, you know, homilies and teachings and things that are full of abstractions and generalities. And so I think, I'm not trying to say I get it right, but I think that all of us, and the clergy especially, need to, I think, hear the concerns of many increasing lay people that are concerned that we're kind of living in the past. We're living in a time when the church was a little more cozy. We're thinking that Christendom is still up and running. It's not. It's been gone for a while, and we have to retool.
Yeah, Monsignor, you write, and I want to quote this from your reflection, that it is time to prepare for persecutions that will get bolder by the month and year. The dark movements that marched in under the banners of tolerance never meant it, and having increasingly gained power, they are seeking to criminalize anyone who resists their vision. What's your advice on this issue of weaponized tolerance and the way it's being used to remake social order?
That's an interesting expression, weaponized tolerance. Amazing, that's good. It's quite a turn of a phrase. I will say that I had an individual come to me where I was giving a retreat recently. He's a pharmacist, and in his state, there has been a law that says pharmacists can and will provide abortifacients, among other things, and so on, and contraception, but also to include abortifacients, and otherwise they will be put out of business. Now, this made it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court didn't hear the argument. So he came to me at a retreat, what am I supposed to do? I'm a pharmacist, and I have a family. And I looked at him, and I said, you're right. You have a family, and I understand that. But you asked me a question, and so I'm going to say to you, do not comply.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that's hard, but you see, that's the thing. People are shocked to hear clergy. They're expecting more of a kind of a jargonistic solution, you know, filled with lots of phraseology and stuff that basically, you know, will let them off the hook. Now, I don't think this man was looking for that from me, but you see the idea. But our people aren't prepared to hear that, and we haven't been talking like that ever. And I think we have to start talking about we're in an age where persecution is going to become more bold, and they're going to feel very self-righteous when they do it. And we have to, I think, be trained. And that's where I think at times we have to, that's what I mean by retooling, both as clergy and at the level of the bishops, to really begin to shift gears and prepare people for tough times ahead, to be able to say to the world, we will not comply in cooperating with evil.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matthew Bunsen, co-host of Register Radio with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. And we're talking with Monsignor Charles Pope about his latest blog entry on comfort Catholicism. And, Monsignor, you mention the bishops and the obligation of priests to preach strongly. You seem to place a great deal of burden on your fellow priests and certainly the bishops. What's the importance in your mind for the leaders of the church in guiding us forward in this difficult era?
Yeah, I think we have to stand before our people, not just as information providers, but as witnesses to the gospel and witness to the truth. And we have to kind of model, I think, a type of preaching that's less just, you know, chatty and informational and more. What I mean by a witness is, what is a witness? A witness is someone who says what they've seen and heard. And so the difference between preaching as a witness is to be able to stand in the pulpit and say, regarding this gospel, my people, I want you to know, I stand before you as a witness that it's true because it's happening in my life, you see. And that's a witness. A witness says what they've seen and heard. So there has to be, I think, more courageous conviction to the truth of the gospel, a very profound leadership, and not just giving information, but giving a model to people as a witness that this is true, and I'll swear to it, and I'll die for it, and even if it's a controversial thing. So that's, I think, the first thing about it, and that would then help parents and others, because there's too many. If there's silent pulpits, there's also silent dining room tables, and that's where I think if we can model, we can help people to bring their dining room tables alive again, if I can use that image.
Well, then, is it worth reminding people what the definition of the word martyr is?
Yeah, absolutely. Witness, and that can mean blood martyrdom, but it starts out as a one who speaks, witnesses who testifies.
You know, Monsignor, you mentioned the dining room table, and, you know, yes, the priests are sitting around the dining room table, bishops are too, but, you know, that's us laity with our families. Where do we go to get retooled on this kind of thing? Do you have recommendations of what to read or to retool ourselves?
I do. I think that, of course, I listen to a lot of apologetical materials, Catholic Answers, and also Colin Donovan, all the EWTN call-in programs. You know, listen to people who are in kind of in the crosshairs or on the firing line. Some wonderful, wonderful shows that, again, these things model how a person hears, rebuttals against our faith charitably, but then answers with clarity, with conviction, and doesn't make a lot of apologies, but just answers clearly and with love. And I think that that's a good place to go. Than any other apologetical materials, I think that's a good place to begin. Watch and listen how people, quote, refute error, as St. Paul wrote to Timothy, that a good bishop should be able to refute error. Watch how people do it, and watch what they get right and what they get wrong, and learn and listen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Monsignor, in your piece you mentioned that there seems to be no training to help prepare the way for what you call a moral and spiritual war, not a shooting war.
Right.
We seem to have exactly the opposite in many of or most of our parishes in terms of the application of the truth and bringing error and light to darkness, don't we?
Yeah, I think it's... we're not just supposed to sit around and just be victims. We're supposed to stand up for the truth. And if we get killed for it, so be it. But, I mean, again, getting killed, of course, doesn't just mean you lose your life. But, you know, even raised eyebrows can cause people, you know, anxiety and distress. But we have to learn, to take our faith boldly into the culture and change the culture rather than constantly being, you know, apologizing in the bad sense of that term and constantly retreating and hiding out. Mm-hmm. Oh, if that answers, you know, what you were saying.
Yeah. Well, in all of the manifest gloom, what are reasons for hope and what are reasons to be optimistic? I'm thinking of the prophetic words of Cardinal George about the church always being there to pick up the pieces.
Yeah. Yeah, as I say, we're staying in a long conversation with this culture. We don't abandon it, but on the other hand, we have to, I think, at some level, begin to be willing to disconnect more from some of the stuff. You know, how many parents, for example, really just have the courage to go to their kid and say, "Look, what you're watching there is not the mind of God, and I want you to turn it off." See, but we don't want to get too isolated and stuff. So I think we have to even get better in that department. Where do we learn to isolate and say, "Look, that's not a"? Can't have a steady diet to that, but where do we also learn to then engage? I think if we spend more time speaking and teaching our children and our parishioners and others, rather than running to the latest movie and talking about the football scores and stuff, if we spent just more time doing that, we would already grow in our faith and be equipped and tooled. But as I say, whatever we can do, I think the first step has got to be to know our faith and to know it as faith. In other words, with conviction, not just information. This is the truth. It is a prophetic description of reality. And this is the truth, and everything contrary to it is false and erroneous and likely just an outright lie.
Mm-hmm. And we are, after all, a people of hope, aren't we?
Yes, and hope is, again, a vigorous virtue, isn't it, Matt? It's the confident expectation of God's help in attaining eternal life and whatever leads to it. And so, yeah, we go out with a great, great hope is really deeply rooted in a confidence in God.
Well, Monsignor, thank you so much for the gift of your time and also for this reflection. I know our readers have appreciated it immensely.
Well, good. Bless you. And I hope we can all just kind of get into the battle, so to speak, and be part of it together, because there's a lot of solutions to this.
Well, thanks again. We all look forward to hearing you on Morning Glory and to reading you on the Register.
Good. Thank you.
Well, that finishes our show for this week. I'm Matthew Bunsen on behalf of our producer, Jeff Burson, and my co-host, Editor-in-Chief Jeanette DeMello. Thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
For information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.